Ah, December. The twinkling lights, gathering around the tree with your loved ones, voting in the presidential primary. Wait, what? Seriously, New Hampshire.
I have a lot to do in December already.
Add that to your list. In New Hampshire, the Secretary of State, this guy named Bill Gardner, is going to decide tomorrow if that state will hold its presidential primary next month. It is the latest development as a bunch of states jockey to hold the first or at least very early presidential primaries. And here's the potential fallout. If New Hampshire votes in 2007.
Okay.
You're going to take notes here, Allie, because it gets kind of complicated. If New Hampshire votes in 2007, Michigan might follow suit.
Okay, the mitten state follows suit.
Florida has already moved its primary up to January 29th, which made South Carolina, which was going to vote on January 29th, they moved it up to January 19th.
All right, so we've got New Hampshire, Michigan, Florida now, maybe.
Yeah, everybody trying to move it up. Meanwhile, Super Tuesday, which normally is in March, looks like now it's going to be February 5th. And in other news, dogs and cats have started living together and having weird cat-dog babies.
That I would believe you.
You could believe anything
did.
At this point. We were wondering, though, is the primary system as we know it over? What exactly is going to be the end result to all this? Well, Robert Spiel is here to talk to us about it. He's associate professor of political science at Penn State Erie, and he's the author of Changing Patterns of Voting in the Northern United States, Electoral Realignment, 1952 to 1996. Hi there, Mr. Spiel.
Hi, Luke. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this. How did these tiny states like New Hampshire and Iowa even get the right to go first in the first place?
Well, it began about 100 years ago when primary elections began. New Hampshire just began to hold a primary election early in the year, and it really the primaries didn't dominate the process at that time. Candidates were still chosen at conventions, and so the primaries just sort of became a testing ground, and New Hampshire went first early on, and ever since they've insisted on going first, and they have that state law, as you know, which requires them actually to vote a week before any other state.
So in the early days when this got established, the primaries weren't as big of a deal, so no one really cared if it was, you know, New Hampshire, so they just sort of got that right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess now we are in 2007, and obviously the primaries are very, very important. I mean, doesn't it really – you hear all this crying from New Hampshire and Iowa and these places that have traditionally had this right. But doesn't it really make more sense to have states like Texas or California where there's big population numbers and diverse populations? I mean, shouldn't these places be really having more say anyway?
There is an argument that it makes more sense because they obviously have more people. But some have actually argued in favor of letting small states go first because – there's more of a chance to voters meet candidates on an individual basis and get to know them better, which would be unlikely to happen in a Texas or California primary.
Right, but I mean, so you met everyone in New Hampshire,
yeah.
Literally every person. I mean, you're talking about a sort of rural, really homogeneous states that have this giant impact on these people who are going to be, you know, in charge of other places, like I said, like Texas, New York, places that have more population. I mean, it just seems, when you look at it, like it kind of is a nonsensical situation.
It is insane. Of course, back in 2004, just 3 years ago, when John Kerry won the Iowa caucuses, the whole Democratic nomination process essentially was over based on voters in one state. I agree with you. This is kind of a nutty way to choose a president.
I mean, is this just the natural – is this evolution just taking place here? I mean, is this how things should sort of be going?
Not really. It's because there is no federal law about the issue. Congress has never passed any sort of law about primary elections. So states are just competing to go earlier and earlier, and we're seeing the effects of that next year. And it's not clear where it's going to stop.
Yeah. Like they're going to start – the primary is going to be the day after the president is sworn in or something.
Yeah, something like that. Or I think, you know, we may be having them on New Year's Eve in the future. So in between celebrations, we can go to the poll.
Well, no, that's a dangerous thought.
Yeah, right. Because people need to be drunk when they're voting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pop open the champagne and go vote.
Go for it, America. Well, New Hampshire is trying to sort of leapfrog ahead of Iowa. And Michigan is then chasing New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And all these other states are kind of fighting to be early. Is this unprecedented?
It's unprecedented that it's gone this early. I mean, I don't think – I'm sure Iowa right now is scheduled for January 3rd, just 2 days after New Year's Day, and I don't think there has ever been a caucus or primary anywhere near as early as that. There have been primaries and caucuses in late January, but this is by far the earliest, and it's also the most states trying to do it as early as possible.
I mean, what's the political impact of this? Does it mean different kinds of candidates get elected potentially?
It's hard to tell. We don't know yet. I think one big political impact next year is that voters are going to go nuts because we may have the Democratic and Republican nominees chosen by early February, which means we're going to end up with a 10-month-long general election campaign, which I do not think voters are going to enjoy watching.
Why even have conventions at that point in the summer?
In the way the conventions are left over from the old days of the way we used to nominate presidents, these days they're fairly pointless. I mean, it's basically a big party for Democrats and Republicans to get together.
Can you actually just take us back? Because I don't think that's a given for people. How did it used to work? How did they used to pick the people that were going to run for president? And then how does it work now?
Okay, way back in the 1800s, the party conventions began where state party leaders would assemble people to go to a national convention and choose the presidential candidate. And then early in the 20th century, about 10 to 15 states began the presidential primaries to choose delegates to the convention, but two-thirds of the state, including all the big states, would continue just to have state party leaders send a bunch of people to the national conventions. And so presidential primaries for most of the 20th century were just sort of a testing ground where candidates could prove they were popular in a few small states. It didn't really mean a whole lot in the end. And then in 1968, Hubert Humphrey won the Democratic nomination for president, even though he had not campaigned any of the primary elections. And a lot of Democrats, this is in the middle of the Vietnam War, of course, and a lot of Democrats got disgusted with that, and they changed the process beginning in the 1970s. And we've had this new process ever since where most delegates are chosen in the primaries or the caucuses.
Is that the election that Hunter S. Thompson writes about in Fear and Loathing?
Yes, exactly. Yes. And interestingly, the Democrat who led the move to change the way in which presidential candidates are nominated was George McGovern, who ended up being the Democratic nominee with this new process in 1972. And that is the campaign that Hunter S. Thompson wrote about.
If for anyone who hasn't read that book, it's really hard to really follow what's going on.
Yeah.
But it's super interesting, and it kind of goes to that there used to be these backroom plays that went on, and it was a real surprise that would happen.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I mean, McGovern was the first candidate as we began this transition to our current process, but there was still a lot of the backroom dealing at that time.
Yeah. Is this something that Congress could potentially address? There's this Help America Vote Act, which was passed in 2000.
Right. That focused on voting machines and the voter registration process. The Constitution basically says it's up to states when to hold elections, but Congress, if it wants to, can intervene and set election dates. So theoretically, actually, Congress could step in at any time and say, this is going to be a national primary election date, that's it, and states can no longer pick their own dates and do what they're doing now.
Do you think they'll do that?
I think there's a chance. I think based on what's happening right now and what looks like it's going to happen in January, that there may be demands for Congress to step in and do something about this.
Well, I was looking forward to drinking champagne and voting at the same time. Dreams can't always come true. Professor Robert Spiel, political scientist at Penn State's campus in Erie. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on the Bryant Park Project, NPR film critic Bob Mondello will join us to tell us a little bit about a new documentary that looks at the crisis in Darfur through six people who are involved in the situation in all different ways. Everybody from a 24-year-old activist to George Clooney.
Mm-hmm. And also copper wire. What does crystal meth and the Chinese construction boom have in common? Well, it's led to the cancellation of a football game in Arizona. What? That's coming up on the BPP.